Yo, welcome to the Lusuma podcast. I'm Charles Lusuma. Back in the car again, of course. These podcasts lately only happen in the car. So every time that you hear me talk, at least for the last couple weeks, I've been driving, and it's a good chance for me to reflect and think about stuff. It's either that or get mad at the LA traffic. So between the two, I much prefer talk to you guys. Today is Monday, actually. I just got back from Las Vegas. I took a short trip with the wife to Las Vegas, where I hadn't been for about a year. She used to live out there. And we used to go fairly often, you know, once or twice a year, but hadn't been in a little while. And because we used to go, the casinos still occasionally send us, free rooms and stuff. And ever since the kids, we hadn't really gone anywhere, certainly not alone. And this was the first time that we'd gone somewhere without the kids. And it was nice. It was just totally different than our typical trip. I mean, everywhere we go now, we take the kids. And we stayed at the Mandalay Bay. We stayed there a lot of times, had some good food, and of course, when in Vegas, do as the Romans do, or that's not really how it goes. But so we gambled, and I like playing I like playing craps. I like playing blackjack. I know the rules, know the odds. I know that it's not in my favor. But I play anyway because I have nothing else really to do when I'm there, to be honest with you. A lot of people, certainly I'm a little older now. I'm not really going clubbing anymore. I'm not really drinking that much. What else is there to do? I'm not a big massage, you know, spa treatment kind of guy. I guess you could be, but I'm not. What else? I guess there are other ways to, you know, entertain yourselves, but as far as, you know, when I go there, I'm just hanging out at the tables. Usually it's a nice little retreat with friends, you know, just to hang out, drink. But, you know, this trip was kind of quiet, kind of mellow. So anyway, about halfway through the first day or first night, rather, I've been sitting at the tables way longer than I should have, which is really not even that long, meaning like an hour and a half or so. And I'm down enough where I'm thinking to myself, you know, I don't know what I'm doing here. This is a waste of money. And, you know, it's money I'll never get back. So I should just stop while I'm ahead, or really not that far behind. So I was thinking, well, I should just get a drone. And I don't know why I thought that. I can't remember the real impetus of why I wouldn't say, oh, I should get a new computer, or I should get a, you know, something else, a new lens or something. You know, I don't know why, but I think there are a few things that have coincided. Like lately I've been thinking about getting back into video. I think because of the A7R Mark II, and with its video capabilities, like 4K plus in-camera stabilization plus face recognition, really solves a lot of problems for me. I'm going to try to use the camera without follow focus. Follow focus is where you can, traditionally video cameras didn't do autofocus at all, and certainly not face recognition. And therefore, if you wanted to focus with, you know, a video camera, you'd have to install or attach a manual focus mechanism. Now, it's impossible to hold the camera and then turn the lens in order to manually focus it. You could do so, but I suppose you'd introduce a lot of camera shake. So a follow focus system is just an attachment that goes onto the camera and also onto the lens itself, so that you can then turn a knob without shaking the camera and then acquire manual focus. Now, that's how I did everything, all the videos that I'd ever done in the past, was use one of those follow focus systems with a little rig that you'd attach your camera on. But fast forward 4 years and technologies have come a long way. Even the gimbals that I used to use, like I had a Blackbird gimbal, you know, it's basically just a stick with a weight on the end of it, on the bottom of it. You attach your camera up at the top, and basically it's a weighted system that tries to hold your camera steady. And once you balance it and once you keep, you know, put it on properly, it was relatively stable. Now, as a passive gimbal, meaning that it didn't have motors or anything in it, once it got out of alignment or once it kind of was tilting the wrong way, you couldn't really save it. It just kind of went the wrong way and you had to manually use your hand to kind of pull it back. Gimbals these days, probably, this is, I'm just guessing here, because of the advent of drone technology, have really come a long way and really evolved to be able to handle a lot of to cancel out a lot of unnecessary motion, to the extent where now they're using motorized gimbals, and I'm sure they've adapted some trickle down technology from probably old stabilizers or old steady cams and stuff like that. I'm pretty sure those all had motorized gimbals, and so now you're seeing these technologies in things like drones and things like handheld steady cams, like real small ones, you know, and it's making video work a lot easier. Now, that was never the problem for me, but it is maybe the reason why I'm getting back into it. So why did I think, oh, I should get a drone instead of throw more money away at the tables? I don't know. I think I was just looking at drones maybe for the last couple of days, for not even the last couple of days, maybe just, it just popped into my mind that it might be something fun. Actually, no, I can tell you now. I can tell exactly why. I got a drone for my birthday, and I think I mentioned that in one of the other podcasts. A little toy one, like a $70 drone. And when I saw this coyote in my backyard. He was taking a nap, and he was laying flat on the ground, so I could only see his ears, or just one ear, really. And I was thinking, well, I want to take a picture of him, you know, but I didn't have any telephoto lenses and I didn't have anything that I could really get close enough to him with. You know, I was pretty sure I was going to spook him if I was going to try to creep up on him. But anyway, I was thinking, and I guess coincidentally that day I just started charging the battery to the drone that I'd gotten for my birthday. My birthday was months ago, but I had this drone and it was just sitting in my closet, and I happened to be charging the battery for it that day because I happened to be thinking about, hey, I should just fly it around the house. So I grabbed the drone, popped in the battery, and literally it was the first flight that I ever took. So I guess I can try to see if I can link you guys to this video that's on my Facebook page. But I threw in the battery, turned everything on. I'd never flown a drone before. At least I hadn't flown this one. I think I'd maybe flown Keith's little, tiny little drone that he brought into the office one day. I'm pretty good with remote control things. I fly remote control airplanes and helicopters and stuff. I've done so in the past. So, I mean, I kind of had basic knowledge of, like, how to control these things. So I fly it all the way to the coyote. And he's remarkably not too scared of it. Like, he gets up after I get pretty close to him with the drone. He stands up, he looks at it. He's a little bit leery of it, but he doesn't want to leave his shady spot that he's picked out in my backyard. And so every time I fly the drone a little bit farther away, he tries to creep back into his spot. And then, of course, with me flying erratically, because, you know, I couldn't really control this drone, and the drone doesn't have any stabilizers, it doesn't have any gimbals or anything. It just kind of, you know, look, it's all manual pilot, all, you know, it's as good as you can, you know, as good as you are in the sticks is how good that thing is going to fly. So I'm all over the place. I'm flying up and down. I'm like almost crashing into trees. And he's a little spooked by it, so he takes off. But not before I got pretty good footage of being like 3 feet in front of his face. So I was able to get some of that footage of him in my backyard. So that's why, now I remember now, that's why it crossed my mind that I should just get a drone instead, because after that, I charged up the battery again, I flew it around my house, and I was like, oh, this is pretty cool, you know? And then having pissed enough money away over at the tables, I was like, okay, maybe I should just get a drone instead. And so I think a lot of these things are happening kind of coincidentally and very fortuitously at the same time. You can call it serendipity if you want. I tend to think of it as just good timing, because the last time that I had, that I even touched video was literally about 4 years ago. This was before the birth of my first daughter. And I kind of walked away with it, you know, not having really any good storylines and whatnot. The technology was never a barrier for me. I never felt like I wasn't able to create the things that I wanted to do because I didn't have the technology or the tools to do it. Now, that being said, my style of photography or doing anything whatsoever, transcending photography, I mean, just the way that I am, I'm very independent. I like being alone. I like being out and about, running around with one model, no makeup artist, no stylist, no cam op, you know, like, I just like doing things a lot on my own. And this is true of me regardless of photography. You know, to put it into perspective, I used to play this game called Dark Age of Camelot, which is like World of Warcraft, but it predated World of Warcraft by a couple of years. And the class of character that I was just this all-around jack of trades. And, you know, I didn't purposely pick this guy. It was kind of at the recommendation of one of my friends who played it. And he was like, hey, you should be this guy, you know. And I was like, okay, I guess I'll try it. But lo and behold, it was kind of the right fit for me, because with that character, I was able to run around by myself and not really need a lot of help. And that's kind of the way that I do things. So it was never because I didn't have the right technology that I wasn't able to create videos. It was more so that, again, the lack of thought or the lack of storyboards or stories rather, that limited me from creating more things. Again, but that being said, I really do like thinking and doing things alone. And so the advent of all this new technology is affording me the opportunity to re-explore a lot of the things that I used to do in the past, but now alone, and now without the follow focus unit, and now without a slider, which I never had anyway. But at least now I may not need a wheelchair, because a wheelchair, why do I have a wheelchair? This was when I worked with Jay actually, instead of using a slider or instead of using what are the things that they generally use? I don't know. I mean, instead of having like tracks and setting up a shot, like we basically used a wheelchair and we filmed the video that became the Kate Compton video that I'd shot. And you know, being on a smooth surface inside the studio, because it was a warehouse floor or warehouse, and then the floors are made out of concrete and very, very smooth polished concrete, right? We were able to wheel Jay was wheeling me around, or I was wheeling him around on the wheelchair, and that's how we got all the shots where we were moving around Kate or the box or whatever, you know. Subsequently, I'd use a wagon. I think we might have used a wagon for that too, or was it just a wheelchair that day? I think this was before my wagon. I didn't have a wagon at the time, so Jay brought his wheelchair. So now, you know, again, fast forward, say, four years or so, you have in-camera stabilization systems such as on the Sony A7R Mark II or A7 Mark II, like the one I used to have. Probably the A7S Mark II has it too. I don't know, because I don't have that camera. But with an in-camera stabilization system and then maybe a gimbal, and then, of course, if you really wanted, I suppose you could combine that with some digital stabilization, so like software stabilization. I don't really think you need any of those sliders, any of those wheelchairs, any of those those rails or real set shots where you used to have to, you know, put everything together just to get one shot. And I think everything can be very dynamic now. So I think it behooves me to explore those technologies in order to look at what I can now do 4 years later without all that assistance from either additional tools or additional people. But once again, I think it comes down to fortune, because I wouldn't even be thinking about it had I not been to Vegas and had I not been losing money, or I had the model that I'd shot or was going to shoot last week not had problems with communication and not knowing that we were doing any fashion nudity. All these things kind of roll itself up into what's happening right now, which is basically I have a moment to breathe. I have a moment to think about what I want to do. And, you know, one of the other coincidences was that over this past weekend on my Facebook, I saw that one of the videos showed up as a memory. And it was one of those things where, you know, Facebook reminds you of things that had happened in your life, events, you know, sometimes 1 year, sometimes 2 years, 3 years, or 4 years. And it just happened to choose something that happened 4 years ago and said, hey, this was what happened 4 years ago. And it was a video. It was a snippet from the workshop video or video workshop that I did 4 years ago. And I just rewatched it. I actually rewatched the whole video and it was fun. Like it was, first of all, I think this is the first time I'd ever watched it maybe in its entirety without it being something that I was actively working on. Like the last time I watched it in its entirety, I was probably working on the video and editing it. Which is to say, in 4 years, I hadn't ever watched that video, and certainly not from beginning till end. And for me, it's like I get attached to things, and then, you know, some of the problems with it kind of, like when I was watching, I was like, well, you know, this is nice, but it's definitely like a little too clothed, because comparatively speaking, I had the Kate Compton video to, you know, as a comparison, and that was much less clothed. But because we were shooting for, you know, as a workshop, I didn't want to make it too risque. But, you know, and that created kind of the downside of it being overly styled. But anyway, when I watched it now, or 4 years later, my feelings towards the video were totally different. I actually enjoyed it. Like, I thought it was cool. Whereas 4 years ago, I kind of thought it was, I don't know. I don't know what I thought it was. It was different. It was certainly a chore. Like, when I was editing it, it was really challenging. I remember taking screen caps of the edit, and it was a lot of cuts. It was very complicated. In that style of video, there's a lot of movement and a lot of micro cuts, so you wind up doing a lot of editing for even a couple seconds. And that was one of the things I think that maybe turned me off towards getting back into video, because even though they were short videos, a minute or two, or even, you know, that one was what, like 3 or 4 minutes, it wound up being a lot of work, because for 1 minute, I think I said something like it had 400 cuts or something like that. And I don't know if that's true or not, but it's definitely believable, because even in one sequence of like 3 seconds, I could probably have like, I don't know, 7, 8 cuts in it, you know? It just depends on what I'm trying to, like action or that the style I'm trying to, I guess, accomplish. Anyway, long story short, those type of videos that I'd made in the past were very, very post-process consuming or editing. You know, it took a lot of editing in order to get it to its final product. And so I guess maybe that was one of the turnoffs for what I was doing in the past. But at least now that I look at it, you know, I enjoyed the video. I thought it was cool. I was actually kind of surprised by how it turned out, you know, especially because it was a workshop. Like, it wasn't like I was just doing this on my own. And because of that, it was much higher production. Like, I had people in it, like the people who played the doctors in the video, they were, I'll link you guys to the Condition 1 video, otherwise you guys have no idea what I'm talking about. The people who played the doctors in that video were photographers. They were the photographers that were taking the workshop. So all the video footage that we did for this video was created and captured during the workshop, and then I edited the video on my own, like, you know, over the next couple of weeks, because it took time to edit it. But the storyline, I came into the workshop with a whole story of, okay, this is how it's going to go. Jessica's going to be this, you know, model. She's going to go into a casting, and then she's going to go through this transformation. And then, of course, at the end of the video, you see that, you know, this isn't a casting. This is like an interview where she's, this is like a mental condition evaluation, you know, that they were doing because she's in a psych ward, and the doctors basically realized that she was still nuts. And of course, these are the type of videos that I like to make, and the stories are actually just as fun as making the video itself. Funny thing is, I was just talking to Rick Kraft, who I haven't talked to in a couple years, possibly maybe a year and a half, 2 years, and he's a video guy, and we were just throwing ideas around for a video, and he was telling me about his short story that he was, or a short film that he was going to shoot. But that's an aside. That has nothing to do with anything. But so anyway, getting back to the Condition 1 video, that video was shot for the workshop. It was, you know, if you look at the production, like, there are more, like, there are three models in there. There were actors. Ronnie and Ren made a cameo in there as the psych ward assistants or nurses or whatever. And they pulled Jessica out. And those are the stories that really intrigue me, because it's more than just a behind-the-scenes video. And that's kind of that has always been my main gripe with kind of the things that I've seen, whether it's Arsenic or whether it's just your typical behind-the-scenes, you know, shot of the makeup, shot of the girl in the chair getting her makeup done, shot of, you know, the photographer taking pictures, like, that kind of stuff. Again, it just bores me. So for me, if I want to get back into it, I want to do something a little bit more entertaining. Now, all that being said, what is the point? There is no point. I'm just telling you a story. I'm telling you how 4 years later, things are different. That technology is much different. That it's more possible than ever to be a one-man show and to do all these things alone. It's easier than ever to create bigger productions, but on a small budget or no budget, and do it all by yourself. And for me, again, how it all ties back to me is, I've always wanted to get back into video. I've always been interested in it. And, you know, this is the right time. And let me go back full circle and talk about the drone. After coming back from Las Vegas, I remember one of my friends had a Phantom 3, a DJI Phantom 3. And that's the previous iteration. They have the Phantom 4 right now. And so I texted him. I said, you know, how do you like your Phantom 3? He wrote back and said he hadn't flown in a while. He asked me if I wanted to fly it. I was like, yeah, sure. So he drops it off on Saturday, and I plug it in. Everything's good. And within minutes, I'm flying this thing. And it's the easiest thing in the world to fly. I've never flown anything that is so... I can't even describe to you how stable this thing is. I mean, there's enough technology in there that I think would rival most countries' nuclear missiles. And I know that's an exaggeration, but for the amount of money that you're spending, really, I think, let's say the retail value or a retail price for the drone is, let's say, $1,500 for, let's say, the Phantom 4. The amount of technology that's in there, the drone really should be priced at $15,000. And here's why. Like, first of all, everything is molded. Everything is plastic molded. Everything is mass produced. And everything, like, like someone had to actually spend time to design the whole plane or the whole drone itself, and of course the propellers and the size of the propellers and the motors, and then the positioning of the motors and everything, right? Okay, so that's all kind of normal, I guess. But then you have this camera, and I know in the beginning when DJI first started out, they used to let people attach their GoPros. That's how people got video footage. And this was way before first-person view. So people would attach their GoPros, and I remember rolling shutters, and I remember the vibrations, and people would have to, you know, dampen those down. I don't know how they did it, but there were all these things that people would have to deal with, you know, first-person view or even just recorded footage. With the Phantom 4, even with the Phantom 3 Professional that they have, they've developed the gimbal. First of all, they have their own camera, so you no longer have to attach anything. That means it's all balanced. That means everything that's on there, unfortunately, though, you can't take it off, meaning that there's no interchangeable lens. That means there's no you know, swapping and adding a different lens or attachment. But at least it means that everything's balanced, everything works, everything's stable. Out of the box, it's great. You know, you calibrate it, but within minutes you could be flying. But the gimbals themselves are amazing. I mean, even the little rubber mounts that the gimbals rest on, you know, which reduce the camera reduce the drone vibrations that then transfer into the camera. I mean, everything was well thought out. That's what I'm saying. And then you're like, okay, well, what, motors don't cost that much? No, they don't. Propellers don't cost that much? No, they don't. You can get a quadcopter for what, $250? Yeah, absolutely. What else can you get? You can, you know, batteries don't cost much at all. You know, the one that my friend has is a 4,000 milliamp battery. You know, you can get 5,000, 6,000, 7,000. You can get all those. I know the Phantom 4 runs a 5,350 or something like that. You know, 5,000 milliamp battery. You can get them to run 10 cell, you know, for greater power output. Yeah, absolutely. None of anything that I've said so far is expensive, but it's the fact that someone actually put it all together. That's the key. Someone actually tested all this. Actually, thousands of people or millions of people tested this. That's what makes it amazing. Oh, and then also, you're getting the radio as well as the drone itself. Most of the time when I fly things, anything that I fly, you're buying the radio separately, the transmitter. You don't get the transmitter with the whatever it is that you're flying, whether it's a plane or helicopter, because transmitter costs money. Transmitters cost a lot of money, and because they're programmable and they can do a lot of stuff, and you know, they're cheap ones and expensive ones, most people prefer having their own transmitters. Well, with the Phantom, you actually get a transmitter every time you buy the drone. So you can also argue, well, transmitters don't cost that much money, and yes, they don't, I suppose, a couple $100. And then these transmitters, they actually come with a holder for your iPad or your iPhone or your Android device or whatever. There's a little mount that you can clamp on. And then all the buttons are already figured out. Like, you know, being able to control the camera from the transmitter itself. Like, all the buttons are set up so that you can take pictures, videos. You can change the exposure. You can change the angle of the camera. And I suppose you could say, okay, yeah, but all that stuff is readily available. But again, someone set all that stuff up. Someone actually made these things all work together. You know, I don't know how else to describe that. When I buy an airplane, it takes me like a good maybe 20 hours to set it up and to make it actually fly correctly. Whereas when you buy the Phantom, it literally will fly out of the box. Like, there's nothing else you need. You charge the battery, you put it in, you turn it on, upgrade the software, and then you're good to go. And those things, that is amazing. Now, the last piece of amazingness that I find is really, really, I think it's really important and really worth talking about, is the software that's involved with with the Phantom 3, 4, doesn't matter. It's the DJI Go software. Now, all the physical things aside, right, all whether it's the drone, the gimbal, the camera, the controller, the transmitter, yeah, all those things you could maybe repackage. Like, you can take an existing one, and, you know, or you can just make one with all the parts, fine. But someone actually had to put together the app. And the app is amazing because it's literally a flight controller. Like, it's a flight, it's an on-screen display. We call them OSD. And you can literally fly off of that screen, and it has all the information that you would need. I mean, it actually has way more information than I even needed to just fly the plane the first time or fly the drone the first time. But it does all sorts of amazing things, like waypoint plotting. It does, you know, shows you your location, GPS. It shows you all the data, like where you are, how far your drone is, how strong the signal is. It's just an amazing piece of software because it's specific to the Phantom, and beyond that, it just works. Now, I've had some challenges with the software updating. That hasn't been pleasant. Yesterday, I was trying to fly the drone like right around dusk, and I took everything out, put everything on the ground, and I was ready to take off. But then the radio kept saying that I needed to upgrade the software, and I failed. I tried and I failed a couple times, and I was like, I looked it up on the internet, and it didn't look too complicated how to fix it, but I just didn't have time for it, so I just boxed everything up. So that was a one annoying, you know, that's the only grievance that I've had with the drone so far. But all that being said, that's the way that, you know, that they limit or that they comply with FAA regulations of where you can fly, how far you can fly, how high you can fly. All these things that are very important to being able to stay within the law, you know, abide by the law when it comes to, you know, UAV, which is unmanned aerial vehicles, I think is what it is, which basically is what a drone is. All that aside, all the grievances aside, the one grievance that I've had aside, it's an amazing feat of one company being able to assemble all these things and put together a consumer level product that is really, really good out of the box. If I had to go so far as to compare it to something, it's really iPhone level quality that you're getting straight out of the box. It absolutely works, and it absolutely works in spades. And again, for the amount of money that you're paying for it, like $1,500, it really ought to cost a lot more. So, all right, I'm done raving about the Phantom. I just got a Phantom 4. Hopefully it works and it's not a dud. I picked it up from a guy on Craigslist who turned out to be a really cool dude. He has the Phantom 3 himself. And I boxed up my friend's Phantom 3, so I'm going to give it back to him. But, you know, I'm going to test it out. If you guys have seen what I've been trying to do with it, basically I really do think that I could put it into production with some of the videos that I may or may not shoot in the future. So, again, I'm doing what I suggested, I think, a podcast or two ago, where I'm using technology to kind of keep my momentum and keep my excitement level high. So will the videos be totally different? No, not in the beginning, because part of it is going to be just getting to know, or not getting to know rather, but rekindling my love for video. And that's going to be a little challenging because some of the software such as Final Cut that I still use is way outdated and may or may not work with the kind of codecs or the files that I'm going to be importing. I've never imported anything in 4K. I've never edited anything in 4K. All of that I'm going to have to re-explore and kind of figure out. You know, there are going to be new challenges along the way. But at the same time, it'll be fun. It'll be way, way different than whatever I'm doing right now, which is mostly stills. And it'll be fun to explore all these things in the process. So I'm sure I'm going to have a, you know, another report soon enough talking about the Phantom 4. And I've got some other goodies coming along that I hopefully will be able to apply in the near future, very near future, I hope. So anyway, if you guys have any questions, if you guys want me to talk more about the drone or not talk more about the drone, let me know. You can always find me on Instagram, Facebook, email, website, wherever else. And thanks again for listening, and I'll talk to you guys all soon. Peace.